Welcome to the Behind the Sports Medicine podcast, proudly sponsored by AJR Sports Science and Healthcare Consulting. AJR offers top-tiered services in sports science analytics, healthcare consulting, and leadership development. Learn more at ajrsportsscience.com. I'm your host, Andrew Rizza, an athletic trainer with over 25 years of experience in physical therapy and school athletics. I started the podcast to dive into the evolving world of sports medicine, physical therapy, athletic training, and sports science.
And I'm your co-host, Cameron Roth, a hand and upper extremity surgeon based in Phoenix and a consultant for MLB Chicago White Sox. I'm excited to team up with my good friend Riz to explore everything from surgery, rehab, performance, and mindset. Now, on to the show.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to this week's Behind the Sports Medicine podcast. This week, I have Brian Petrone, a physician assistant who works with Dr. Thomas Gill, and I've had a lot of interaction with him in clinic and with patients. Today, we're going to talk about a new venture that he has started in the last 3 or 4 months with Dr. Gill called Boston Orthopedics and Wellness. Brian, welcome to the show. Appreciate you coming on tonight.
Thanks, Riz. Thanks for having me. Really appreciate it. Known you for a very long time, and you've helped us with many of our patients throughout the years and have done a fantastic job. Obviously, you know that I work with Dr. Gill for the past 17 years or so, and we've had a lot of patients that we've been able to send over to you, and you've been able to take care of them, which has been fantastic, and we can't thank you enough for that. I am a physician assistant. I do work with Dr. Gill. We work in the operating room and in the clinic, and we've worked together well, and certainly over the last couple of years, looking to new and different therapies that we could help our patients on the cutting edge of regenerative medicine. And to the light of that, we've looked in and researched several things that we'll dive in tonight too, and talk more about it, and happy to share with the listeners about what we do down at Boston Orthopedics and Wellness. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, you bet. And I'm excited for this conversation. And I have to apologize. I didn't introduce my co-host, Dr. Cameron Roth, who's out in Arizona. Dr. Roth, welcome again. This is episode 3 for you.
Yeah, appreciate it. Third time's a charm. Brian, it's so awesome to have you on. Obviously, our worlds collide with Dr. Gill and Riz, and I'm sure we've crossed paths maybe when I was a high school or college students, and I'm really looking forward to hearing about your recent expertise and what you've learned about treating patients with, you know, really what's going to be the cutting edge of orthopedics, regenerative medicine, biologics. So I'm looking to learning a lot from you and hopefully help patients in my practice. So appreciate it.
Thanks, Dr. Rock. Appreciate it. And certainly do remember you from back in the day hanging with Dr. Gill and I. It was a pleasure to have you there. And it's even more pleasurable to have you on the other side of medicine and treating patients out in Arizona. So thank you.
And for some of you listeners, Dr. Roth is actually related to David Lee Roth. No joke, singer from Van Halen. So if anybody likes Van Halen, reach out to Dr. Roth. Maybe he can get you a memento from David Lee.
I've gotten two people mementos from David Lee in the past, and Riz, you are one of them. And then Dr. Thomas Gill is the other one.
It was kind of funny. I'll just give a little backstory. So when Cam was in high school, Cam came in as a young freshman, and I always remember people's last names. I said, Roth, are you related to David Lee? He's like, well, funny you say that, because I am. It's my father's cousin. I'm like, get out of town. So lo and behold, 4 years later, Cam comes in and is a picture signed by David Lee Roth to me, you know, which is pretty cool. So,
that's awesome.
Fun fact about Dr. Roth. So, Brian, can you give us a little description about the practice? And you kind of talked about it a little bit, but you guys have talked about, you know, regenerative medicine and like how can we get this type of therapies to our patients? Can you dive a little bit more into why that has all of a sudden transpired in your practice? And what's your vision of it, I would say, in the coming months, years, and how your practice is going to continue to evolve?
Sure. Working with Dr. Gill over the past 17 years, we've worked with professional athletes, New England Patriots, Boston Red Sox, and the Boston Bruins. And over the past several years, we've went to private practice where we treat a lot of high school athletes, collegiate athletes. We still treat a large number of professional athletes and the weekend warriors, and patients coming in, whether they're doing their sports that are continuing on when they played in high school and in college, or they've now picked up pickleball. And over the past couple of years, we have not really had a lot of biologics to offer patients. And as you know, patients come in, have knee pain, have shoulder pain, and another sports-related injury, and our resources are limited. They ask us, what can we do for them? After maybe obtaining an MRI, x-rays, we talk about a diagnosis, we talk about next steps, which may be sending them over to urez for physical therapy. It may be time, rest, give it maybe a cortisone injection, typical NSAIDs, and then it's either return back to the office for next steps, or we talk about surgery, or people generally get better. Over the last couple of years, a lot of patients have asked us repeatedly whether they've seen on social media, or they've read in research articles, or they've heard from friends about biologics and regenerative medicine. And that is out there in this new space that people are interested in just getting an edge on recovering faster. Everybody wants to have the quick healing time. They want to get back to their sport. They're back to their activity. Downtime is, you know, is difficult for people to get through. So whatever they can do to kind of cut that down, they're going to do. So when they've come to us over the past couple of years and asked us, we really didn't have a lot of answers. We started looking into certain biologics to do. And then over the past, I would say 6 to 8 months, working with Dr. Gill, I decided to pack that in by my own knowledge and research with other medical providers alongside with Dr. Gill. We went down the road of, let's look into biologics and research regenerative medicine and figure out what we can do for our patients. And that's where Boston Orthopedics and Wellness came about. I said, well, here's a great way to offer all these great things to patients that we can do and get them better and get them back on the field, the court, and what they want to do and how they get back to their living their life that they want to live. So here we are.
Can you give us an overview of what services you're providing? And then we can definitely go into more detail about specific therapies and the literature behind it and what your experience has been.
Absolutely. So some of the regenerative medicine and biologics that we do offer are PRP injections, which are platelet-rich plasma injections, the nuances of peptides, which are a whole new space that people are very welcomed about and understand that they want to learn more about, which is great. We also talk about, I will say, structural tissue, which are also called stem cells, but I'm going to leave structural tissue on the table to talk about now as they're in a different arena. And then we get into other things that people are looking, you know, NAD plus, which is the new kind of hot topic, intravenous therapy. So there's a lot of biologics and regenerative medicine that we do here at Boston Orthopedics and Wellness. Not everybody needs all these or even one of them, but something certainly that we talk about periodically with patients. And there's different avenues, obviously, for every patient.
So I think PRP is probably the one that most listeners would be familiar with or maybe Correct. Would be asking for in the clinic, at least in my clinic, in my training, you'll have patients who ask for it or faculty or colleagues will give it or recommend it. Can you explain exactly what it is, what your indications are for giving it, what type of patient would benefit from it, and what kind of effect you expect it to have on a patient's disease or effect moving forward as they continue to get better?
Yeah, so PRP is a great product. It is FDA approved because it's basically taking your own blood, and as long as you put it back into your own body that you don't manipulate it, then you can utilize it. A lot of patients do come in and ask, you know, can I do the PRP? And the indications for PRP injections are typically for tendon injuries, ligament injuries, patients with osteoarthritis. We have done it for. The indications are a little vague as far as, you know, what you'll do for different muscle injuries. I have injected plenty of patients for myotendinous junction tears, muscle injuries, things like that. As far as when I don't want to inject patients, really it's, you know, it comes down to patients that need surgery. So if a patient ultimately needs surgery, if they have a large rotator cuff tear, then we're not going to inject it. If they have a full thickness ACL tear, we're not going to inject PRP. If they have a large meniscus tear that they've been doing other treatments for and down the road, physical therapy, and they need surgery, then our goal is to get them surgery. Now, certainly we can talk about these injections after surgery, which will help regenerate part of that tissue back, or certainly, you know, that their rotator cuff repair site, their ACL repair site, their meniscus repair site, which would be helpful. Two different PRP injections that you can give are leukocyte poor and leukocyte rich. So leukocyte rich PRP injections have a large presence of leukocytes, which are white blood cells. They also have a large presence of platelets. Those are more for your tendon injuries. You can do it for small tendon injuries. They have done it for skin as well. But I see more people using leukocyte poor. Leukocyte poor have a low leukocyte, low white blood cell count, and a high platelet count. Therefore, those are better for your tendons, your Achilles tendon, your patella tendon, hamstring tendon, distal hamstring tendons, and joints, mainly for joints because you don't have a lot of irritation. The more white blood cell count leukocytes that you have in that injection, then you're going to have more irritation. And that's the last thing you want to do is get an injection and be on the meds and have it help and have a lot of irritation to that joint. So we try not to inject those joints, obviously, with leukocyte rich. We always do leukocyte poor, which is the PRP. Patients seem to really benefit from, I've had patients call me back in a week and said they have great results. I've had patients say it takes a little bit of time. I would say the efficacy of PRP injections are probably about 60 to 80%. It's pretty good. Most people with tendon injuries or a hamstring or muscle injuries do really well with it. There is a large number of patients that feel that they just can't get benefit from NSAIDs they're taking or the physical therapy. So they come in, they say, well, what else can I do? What else is there? And really, it's a PRP injection is kind of our first line of defense with managing these treatments. I want to jump back to cortisone injections. A lot of patients kind of come in and ask about cortisone. I do think it has a good role in orthopedics, but I do get concerned about multiple cortisone injections into knee joints and hip joints, shoulders, that it can over time degrade cartilage and kind of degrade tissue a little bit. So we try to stay away from many cortisone injections. And that's why really the PRP injections have come into light. And I think it's a great concept over the past couple of years to think about PRP injections.
Brian, if you have a athlete comes in, patella tendonitis, hamstring tendinopathy or tendonitis, they've tried the therapy, 6 weeks of therapy, 8 weeks of therapy, they're still having discomfort and has that kind of high, they have a pretty high pain tolerance, but every time they get on the field and try to accelerate, sprint, produce power, cut, change direction, and they're still getting that pain. Is that then a conversation of, hey, let's try PRP to see if this, and that would be, if I'm correct here, leukocyte poor type injection versus a leukocyte rich because it's more of a tendon injury. And then when do you have that conversation? And also the second part of that is, what's the age gender restriction?
And are we talking that the patients have received an MRI already, or are we still in the area that we don't know what it is? I can jump into both sides too.
Yeah, I would say I would talk about both. So would you ever have the discussion non-imaging versus imaging? Is probably a better way to frame it.
Sure. I mean, if you have somebody that has come in and they have maybe an ankle sprain, and we know that it's, maybe a distal ATFL injury or a distal Achilles or patella tendonitis, and it's pretty clear that it's nothing that we're talking that needs surgery, then I would feel comfortable, speaking with Dr. Gill and his patients, and he feels comfortable moving forward, that it's nothing that requires surgery. It's a strain of a ligament or a strain of a tendon, that PRP would be definitely something we would move forward with. The difficult thing is with athletes, is doing the injection, there's also parameters we want to talk about afterwards, what not to do. So we want to allow that PRP to work in time. And that means holding those patients off from doing those athletic performances. So the discussion is with, parents, if the child's under 18 years old, it's with the parents, it's with the athletic trainers, it's with the coaches, with the physical therapist is, okay, now we're doing this PRP injection. We're introducing these platelets. However, it's time that we need to give. And I always kind of use the similarities to pulling a scab off, right? So if I keep on lifting a scab off of something and I keep on peaking, Just like if you're going to go for a run or go work out or go back to the field, then that's going to take longer for that to heal. So the discussion has to be with everybody. We need to give this at least 4 to 6 weeks to allow it to heal. Whether somebody's in a brace or a walker boot or an ankle brace, we need to give a time. I haven't seen in any research that I have reviewed that the age discrimination for, you know, under 14 years old or whatever it may be. I can tell you that, you know, most 14, I can find some 14-year-old boys that play football that are bigger than most people, as long as we're, you know, we're not injecting around growth plates or in growth plates. So I'm not worried about, you know, that. It's typically in attendance. So usually age does not matter for us. We typically don't see patients under the age of 14 in our practice.
Yeah. And I'm glad you actually touched upon the rest and recovery post injection. I think a lot of people think that once they get this, I want to say like magic bullet, but when they get it, they think that all's well and next week they'll be ready to play in the playoffs. So it's interesting. I think a lot of people have that misconception and don't understand it enough, but they heard a friend that had it, right? Or they went and they had their cortisone injection and it helped take away the inflammatory response and they end up feeling better and you go back to doing everything. But then somebody else had a PRP and they felt great. But there wasn't that discussion on, hey, you do have to go back to therapy. You do have to go through the stages to make sure you're strong enough, make sure the platelet actually works and does what it's supposed to do. So I'm actually glad that you brought that point up, because that's one of the things that we hear a lot. I think some therapists don't even like to have the discussion because they don't want to give the wrong information, you know? Right. So it's good that you guys are, you know, obviously having that conversation. Dr. Roth, have you had any experience with some of your colleagues on what they're doing with some of the athletes that you guys might see or patients with the same type of pathology?
So I think PRP fits into the algorithm, like Brian was saying. Therapy, of course, is really the gold standard for treatment of any orthopedic issue, cortisone injections like we talked about, but I totally agree with Brian. Multiple cortisone injections, especially with local anesthetic, can be damaging to the cartilage, so damaging to the joint surface, the articular surface. And if you give, you know, multiple cortisone injections over time, it can degrade the tissue quality. And I think PRP fits into that algorithm where if cortisone injection is either not indicated or you've tried cortisone injections or you have a high-level athlete that may have an acute tendinous injury, I think PRP definitely fits in there and can be helpful. I know some of the docs for our Chicago White Sox will do PRP for our players, and some of my colleagues in practice will do PRP for their patients. But I wanted to ask Brian about, this is, I think, a three-pronged question. So when patients walk into the clinic, what should they expect in terms of the process of getting PRP? What should their expectations be in terms of what numbers do you tell them or what do you tell them to expect? And then I think we're all aware that one of the drawbacks of PRP is the cost. So how do you counsel patients on the cost that they may be incurring with the injections?
So the first part of when patients come into our office, you know, we'll have a set of x-rays and some patients will come in with MRIs. And to the point back and speaking with you, Riz, is, you know, there are some patients that they may not need imaging. Typically, every patient would get an x-ray for starters, but not every patient requires MRI diagnostics. We would then probably talk to the patient about, you know, what are their expectations? What are their goals? What would they like to get back into? Are you trying to just get back to work? Are you going to try to get back to your activities? Is it a young athlete that's trying to get back to the field? Elicit some information of what their ultimate achievements, what they're looking at. And then we talk about, is it something that requires surgery? Obviously, let's rule that out. So if I don't think that someone needs surgery, then I want to talk about adjunct therapies. So if it's a tendon injury, a muscle injury, then I talk to them about time frame. What are your goals to get back into sports or activities? It's really this talking with either parents or talking with patients, or this PRP injection will help. But ultimately, your healing process with time and ice and periodic elevation and heating it and going through just the time frame of healing, it will naturally heal. So you don't have to do these injections at all. You don't have to do PRP. You don't have to do biologics or regenerative medicine. However, when patients ask, how can I get better quicker? Or is there anything out there that I can do better? Then that's when I intervene and I say, well, this is, PRP is a great option. And certainly this is something that we can discuss about doing. The PRP is a great, new biologics that have come out in the last couple of years. I try to counsel them of what it is. You know, obviously you need to explain to patients that we take your own blood from your own arm. And it's a small amount, just like a blood work. And we centrifuge it and we do it here in the office. It takes about 15, 20 minutes. And we inject it back into your area of injury. It is a little bit of pain, so it's not pain-free. We're talking about it's going to cut down your time. It's going to heal your tendons or ligaments or injury faster. And with some injuries, it's actually going to heal it better. So you get a little bit more of a, area that's going to be a little bit stronger than it would naturally heal, specifically with some tendon injuries or other ligament injuries, and that's going to happen a little bit better. So when you do return back to your sport or activity, then you do have a ligament or a tendon that's shored up a little bit. Now, regards to costs, and certainly cost comes into play. I mean, there's, unfortunately, insurance does not pay for any of the PRP or other biologics that we do. So cost is certainly a concern. I speak with patients about the cost right up front. PRP injections can cost anywhere from $800 to $1,200 across the board for some orthopedics. I've seen, somewhere in LA or downtown New York, they're close to $2,000. So it's a big wide range of investment to get your life back a little bit. But I do speak to patients about that. I'm upfront with those costs. I advise them if they ask me, how can I get better? And here's a couple options to think about. Most patients are willing to get their health in order and pay for what they need to get their life back. I think a lot of people's priority is getting my life back and getting back on the pickleball court, getting back to getting ready for golf. I mean, it's especially in the Northeast, our seasons are so short. So you look at how can I get, golf season coming up, how can I get back out there? And my daughter has an injury to her ankle, or my son has an injury to his shoulder. How can I get them back, get them ready for next season? I have recruiting coming up, or I have my next club tournament coming up. So people understand how quickly they need to get back and what these things can do for them. So it's certainly helpful.
I have sort of a weighted question here, but anytime I give a cortisone injection, the most common question that is asked to me is, how long is this going to last? So I'm sure people ask you the same questions. What do you tell them?
About cortisone injection or PRP?
About
PRP. I tell them that, if it's an isolated tendon injury or a muscle injury, typically they'll get back close to 100%. I mean, most of the patients, if they have an isolated tendon, ligament, or a muscle injury, I mean, I can't guarantee that we're going to get them back to 100%, but it's pretty close and people do really well. Now, I think talking about rotator cuffs, now you're down to, depends on the size of the tear, where that tear is. Is it a small tear? Is it a partial tear? Is it articular surface? Is it bursal surface? So we're getting into, where is that located? That now we're talking 80 to 70 to 60%. When we get into talking about shoulder joints, glenohumeral osteoarthritis or hip osteoarthritis or knee osteoarthritis, ankle osteoarthritis, then it's a little difficult. Then I talk to patients that it's down to about maybe 60% or even 50%. I can't guarantee that this is going to work for you. However, the alternative is if you have bad osteoarthritis of your knee or your hip, then you need surgery. What are the first thing that patients tell me? I don't want surgery. I don't want a knee replacement. I don't want a hip replacement. What can I do so that doesn't happen? Many times I talk to them and I say, well, listen, you may need it. And it may be the best thing for you because you're going to need it down the road. And some patients, well, I have my son's wedding coming up and I have the big trip I have planned, or I have this, big engagement coming up and I can't do it for another 2 years. Get me through the next couple of years so I can just get there. And that's when, you know, I talk about biologics and PRP injections were a great thing to do. And also physical therapy, of course.
So just to piggyback off of that, if you have somebody with, you know, osteoarthritis in any of the joints that you just spoken about, what are their alternatives if they say, listen, I can't really afford PRP, what's the next best thing that you could offer that may be insurance-based, reimbursable, so they can at least get some time back while they're doing the therapy until they make that decision to make that next jump to operative care?
Sure. Dr. Roth, I think you can kind of weigh in on this as well, is, you know, the cortisone injections, as much as they are effective for a short-term process, they're not the greatest. So if a patient does ask me, they have something coming up, they don't want to do surgery, they don't want, you know, a hip replacement or a knee replacement, then we'll talk about cortisone injections. I want to be upfront with them and let them know that, you know, the cortisone injections, what the risk and benefits are. We also talk about how many can we give. At some point, we have to really talk about, there needs to be a timeline that we talked about total joint replacement. So those questions are definitely from those patients to me about how could I get through, you know, this tough time before I do a total shoulder, knee, hip replacement. And there also is a time frame that you just can't give injections. There's a lot of total joint arthroplasty surgeons that don't want injections, whether it's 3 months before they do their replacement or 6 months. So those are also discussions we talk about. There's other insurance-based medications, hyaluronic acid, which is another option that is out there, which is a synthetically made medication that it's similar to a lubricating medication that you can inject into the joint. And a lot of patients do that. And we do offer that. And patients seem to have good effect for a short period of time. But again, it's similar to cortisone injection. It's something that's going to wear off over time. It doesn't lubricate the joint to the point that you don't have to worry about your osteoarthritis getting progressively worse. I tell patients it's similar to a vitamin in the knee. It hardens the cartilage up a little bit, gives the joint a little bit of a viscosity, and helps with time. But certainly my main goal with patients is giving them certain options, giving them out-of-pocket expense options, talking about insurance-based options. The biggest thing I put home too is becoming healthy. I mean, there's a big subset of patients that do their home exercises, but I do strongly talk to patients about physical therapy, getting to a professional about doing good physical therapy, making sure you're doing the exercises right. And also they're going to show you what exercise you shouldn't be doing. There's a lot of exercise that people are making themselves worse. And I think you know that, Riz, that patients come in and tell you all the time, like, well, I'm doing this, is this right? And you want to shut your eyes and say, no, you know, this is the worst thing ever. I'm glad I'm here. So, you know, it's a good space for all our physical therapists to be in. It's like, this is what we can do to help these patients with longevity of their joints. So then it comes down to nutrition, it's weight loss. So there's a lot of things that patients can certainly do to help them forego doing a total joint replacement, but also doing all these things and then knowing they're going to have a total joint replacement is also good as well. I tell a lot of patients, go to your physical therapist, get information on how to get stronger, how to get better, weight loss, nutrition. All these things you can do to preload yourself before surgery is going to help you tremendously after surgery. You know, I say that for every surgical patient that we see. And it's really helpful. It does make a big difference, for sure.
I have one more PRP question for you. And then I like to switch gears a little bit to talk about the other stuff that you guys provide. So when it comes down to PRP, is there an indication where you're giving intraoperatively or postoperatively due to tissue repair? And how does that work? How does that conversation come up with the patient trying to provide that type of service?
Great question. So it's still out-of-pocket expense. So even though you're having surgery and insurance is paid for by insurance, then it's still an out-of-pocket expense. So now, during surgery, there are surgeons that do PRP injections during surgery, whether it's an open surgery or it's a minimally invasive surgery. And typically what they'll do is, and I've seen a lot of surgeons, shoulder surgeons, do for rotator cuff repairs, and utilize a bio sponge. Essentially what it is, it's a sponge that you can, very small, put right on top of that rotator cuff repair and then inject the PRP that was taken from the patient into that sponge. And then that sponge essentially will soak that repair site. It is helpful for patients to utilize for their surgical recovery and the, you know, couple weeks afterwards and a couple months afterwards. In our practice, we typically don't do that practice. And it's not because I don't believe that it's going to work 100%. I haven't, you know, spoken with enough surgeons to see if that does make a difference versus giving it several weeks afterwards. My only concern is, if you've ever been in a surgery, you've seen how many bags of fluid that we put into somebody's shoulder or somebody's knee. Is probably about 4 to 5 gallons of fluid to insufflate a joint. Some of that fluid still stays in that joint and you're still bleeding, you know, several days afterwards with these small little capillaries, and the bleeding you get from surgical procedures is quite a bit. My concern with that is when we're injecting the PRP, which is probably about 4 to 5, maybe 6 cc's of fluid, and you're putting it in a shoulder or knee, you're diluting a lot of that product. And when that product gets diluted, then the efficacy is obviously less. So I typically will talk to patients and discuss, let's see you back in the office. When we see you back in, you know, whether that's 10 or 14 days, if your inflammation is significantly decreased, then we can talk about injecting it at that point, or we can inject it later on down the road. So obviously, it's under sterile conditions and we're making sure we're providing the best care at that point for our patients and doing a PRP several weeks later. So there's, you know, 100% of that PRP is going to that site of injury under ultrasound guided injection, which is great.
Well, I want to jump to the next question, but I think when is that indicated though, Brian? Is that like if someone has poor tissue quality, maybe had a failed repair, like when does that come into conversation like postoperatively? And you're saying, hey, 7 or 8 weeks down the road or 12 weeks down the road prior to our cuff strengthening, say, we're going to then provide this service. Like when does that come up in conversation? Because the only reason I ask, I've never had anybody that I can remember that's been postoperatively injected after a repair. I mean, they may have. I haven't seen anybody.
Well, I'll go down kind of two roads with that. First of all, I'll give the boosting of Dr. Gill's surgical procedure and his care is top notch. So we rarely need any additional services for our
I think it's the pixie dust he like sprinkles in there.
Yeah, as well as the physical therapist that we send to you. So we really don't need it. But there, you know, there are patients that have poor tissue quality, poor bone quality. And we talk about, you know, how can we expedite that with a little bit of help, you know, for healing. So it is a little bit stronger in there. And, you know, we certainly talk to patients about it. And we go back to, you know, our patients about, well, the cost, you know, so patients come in and, you know, there's a lot of other adjunct costs that go along with surgery and copays and everything. So patients may not want to do that. And they ask me, you know, is it going to heal just fine without doing the PRP? And certainly, yes. You know, there is, you know, a 95 to 100% chance that that rotator cuff repair will heal without doing biologics. However, if somebody says, how can I heal it faster? How can I heal it stronger? What are you guys doing out there that can help me with this to get my rotator cuff better so it doesn't happen again? Or the last thing I want to do is, you know, I don't want to do another surgery. I've had a friend or a relative that has had 2 shoulder repairs and I don't want that. And that's when we'll talk about, well, here's what we can do. I don't tell patients that they ultimately need this. I don't push it on them. I don't tell them that, you know, this is something that is necessary for them to have a full recovery. Something that's out there for them to think about having if they choose to, you know, enter that, you know, biologic or regenerative medicine space. And, you know, certainly discussion, whether that's, you know, day of surgery or a couple of weeks afterwards, or some patients have even done it, you know, 3 months afterwards.
Yeah.
So.
That's a good explanation. I think that will be hopefully well received for people that have questions like on that type of use. Dr. Roth, did you want to talk about going to peptides at all?
Sure, yeah. So let's jump over to maybe one of the newest biologics in the game, something that gets a lot of attention, and hopefully you're able to clear up some information for us, Brian, but tell us a little bit about peptides, because it seems that you offer peptide therapy at your institute. What are peptides? Which peptides should we specifically focus on? And what benefits are they offering your patients?
I'm going to first let everybody know that peptides, the ones that are FDA approved, are medications that are prescribed by physicians. And there are medications that are peptides that are not FDA approved. And some of those medications that are not FDA approved, we'll talk about. And essentially, they have no clinical data for patients. Most of the clinical data that is compiled is from anecdotal evidence from patients, or a lot of evidence is done in labs with mice and rats. So to that point, when people choose to do peptide therapy, I implore them to make sure that they either seek a medical professional, somebody that has knowledge, that has information guided by medical professions that have done their due diligence in knowing indications, dosage, side effects, contraindications for peptides. And there is a large black market, is a gray market for peptide therapy. But I can tell you that there are peptides that have been out there for many years, and patients have done very well with those. And you can certainly look on the internet what patients have done. I can tell you that some of the patients that have come into my office that have been treated with certain peptides have done remarkably well. And some of the newer peptides that are out are always changing. And for the people that don't know what peptides are, they're basically a chain of amino acids. So their proteins are a chain of amino acids from anywhere from 1 to 50. And each amino acid is governed by how many chains it has. A familiar peptide that people have known about is BPC-157, which is body protection compound 157. And that is actually normally made in your gastric juices. So people say, well, you know, are you injecting gastric juices into my injured shoulder or my knee? And no, we're not doing that. And BPC-157, normally found in your gut and your gastric juices, actually help reproduce tissue, fibroblasts, and replicate cells in your stomach lining. It's really the only area in your body that helps replicate tissue, because you're constantly beating your stomach lining up by medications, by food. So they found that they can synthetically make that medication in a lab and then utilize it for regeneration of tissue. So what BPC-157 allows patients to either inject it or take it orally, different ways. So orally, there has been some talk that the bioavailability does not work as well as injectables. Injectables seem to work better, whether you're injecting that in the area of injury or you're injecting that subcutaneously or intramuscularly. Now, the good thing about BPC-157 is it's pleiotropic. Pleiotropic means that once you inject it into your body, then the site of injury actually goes and grabs that BPC-157, brings it back to the site of injury, does a couple things. Increases fibroblasts. It also increases your capillaries and blood vessels, something called angiogenesis. With angiogenesis to the site of injury, you're getting now an increase of growth factors, increase of platelets. So you're expediting that healing process. So you can normally go through that healing process and be fine, but doing the peptide therapies are actually could be cutting your recovery time down in half. Again, the research isn't out there. I can't tell you that it's cutting it down by 75%, 50%, 25%, but people normally heal. However, the information that people have put out there and what I've seen personally is that it's a very rapid increase in healing, and people do very well with it. The great thing is it has a very low threshold for side effects. People do very well with it. The only concerns about the peptide therapy or BPC-157 is that the black market and gray market has something called the lipophilic reactions, which are LPS reactions, which if you take a large amount of the peptide therapy that is made in the black market or gray market, then you get concerned about having an immune response. So again, I implore patients to do their due diligence in finding a medical professional that has good information, that has used these peptides in the past and uses them in a safe manner, in a manner that they will be able to follow up patients and see patients on a regular basis. And obviously, you're not just injecting these medications, you know, by yourself. I think it's a great peptide, a great medication. It's been out there for a number of years, very safe. People have been doing very well with it. One of the things I will say is that it is on the WADA list, so the World Anti-Doping List, so professional athletes, Olympic athletes, NCAA athletes. It's one of those medications that's considered a performance-enhancing drug. So that is something that you cannot use at all. I will tell all my athletes that come to me and ask me, can we do peptides? And I'm going to tell them no.
The follow-up to that, Brian, is that, so rehab protocols. So someone comes in, rotator cuff repair, wants to get peptide therapy. Does that change the timeline of their normal protocol? Are you still adhering to the same protocol guidelines, you know, which is, you know, accessory muscle strengthening, passive range, active assisted for 3 months, and then on to cuff repair?
Yeah, you know, Therese, I still want to put patients in that time frame, you know, as far as making sure they're going through the pathophysiological healing of tendon regeneration and tissue regeneration and also muscle. I mean, it is certainly helping it, and we're seeing that it's helping, you know, cutting down the time, but there's not enough evidence out there to say that, you know, this is going to be an Aaron Rodgers patient that I'm going to get him back on the field in 3 months. I still want to make sure that we're going through the whole same protocol. Listen, if I get somebody in front of me, you know, an ACL patient or a rotator cuff patient, and I see them compared to, you know, the same person that didn't get peptides, usually they're far ahead of that other patient. Now, it doesn't, you know, say that every patient needs peptides. You can certainly, you know, for many years, we've got patients back to the field and back to the court and back to their normal activities without using peptides. However, what are peptides going to allow you to do? Get back a little bit quicker, get back stronger, and allow, you know, a little bit of that downtime to be cut down a little bit. So it is helpful.
Are you offering BPC 157 in the acute setting for those with injuries who want to get back faster? Or are you also offering it as a maintenance therapy for those who want to stay at a high level and who are training and want to be able to train more?
So there's no research out there. The only research that I have seen is, you know, one paper that came out about doing an intra-articular injection of BPC 157. And everything else is, you know, anecdotal evidence and information. However, you know, it is out there, and I have seen patients and taken care of many patients that either they come in for an injury, you know, whether they have an ankle injury, a knee injury, a hamstring, shoulder, you can provide them with a one-time injection of BPC-1, which is a little bit of a larger dose than they would normally get, which in turn is the daily dose. So there's two ways of doing it. You can give either a one-time injection or a little bit of a larger dose to a patient, and they may never have a return back of their symptoms after the recovery of several weeks. Some patients come back after 6 weeks. So I usually would talk to patients and say, if you were to get an injection, 6 weeks later, we can talk about another injection. The other way is that BPC 157 is done for patients is done in a daily injection in the stomach area, in the fat of the stomach. So they take obviously a very small fraction of that medication that was given for the one time, and they're injecting it daily into the stomach. Again, we talked about being a pleiotropic. So if it is injected into the stomach, it'll find its site of injury and get to that area because its half-life is not as long. So we want to make sure that we're injecting it daily into that area. Patients can either self-inject it or they can come to the office and inject it daily. And they do that for a period of usually probably 3 to 4 months until they get their muscle strength back and people feel comfortable that they can get back to doing what they want to do.
Age, gender restriction, or indication, contraindication with any of those?
Yeah. So again, there's no research out there that shows the age, gender. I can say that there's no information out there as far as for females and for pregnancy. And I certainly would stay away from that. I don't think that there's anybody in the medical field that is looking to, you know, consider injecting, you know, females that are considered either pregnant or looking to get pregnant. I would also stay away from patients for that have either tumors or cancer or some sort of, you know, consideration of large nodules, because the BPC-157 does have a subset of increasing blood vessels, increasing angiogenesis, which means that you're bringing in growth factors. So even though it typically has gone down to the site of injury, you still can't ultimately say that it's not going to a different area of their body and increasing blood flow to that area. You know, you think about, you know, similar to growth hormones. So every growth hormone area, you know, looks for new blood vessels to go to an area to increase. So that's something that I do worry about. And I talk to patients and I educate them if there's any concern with any growth or tumors or nodules or cancer history, then we are certainly staying away from that.
Yeah, that's great.
Are there other peptides that you offer in the clinic? And if so, can you briefly just touch on those?
Sure. So another peptide that goes along typically with the BPC-157 is something called TB-500. And TB-500 is a synthetically made medication. They have derived that similar to the thymus in children, where the thymus typically goes away as you get older. The thymus is responsible for cellular generation of healing. So they were able to synthetically make the TB-500, and that goes along typically with the BPC-157. That actually sometimes is combination medication that you can give together. You can give TB-500 alone, and what it's doing, it provides cellular regeneration. It helps stimulate the stem cells. It helps stimulate rigidity of those cells in the area of injury. So it's more of a cellular component than the BPC-1, which is more angiogenesis and fibroblast regeneration. A lot of people call these two medications together, they call it the Wolverine protocol for the modern marvels, for the people out there that have cut off an arm and have regenerated extremities at a rapid rate, that they have now said that the BPC-157 TB-500 is the Wolverine protocol. So it is very helpful.
So just to make it clear to all the listeners, this is not the TB12 peptide. It's the TB...
Yes, no. Yeah. TB500.
Although I wouldn't be surprised if Tom had been or is using some form or fashion of these peptides, among other things. Yeah.
So there are a lot of peptides that are out there. There's, you know, several hundred peptides, and there are peptides that are approved by the FDA. There are peptides that are not approved by the FDA. There are peptides that are for longevity and cardioprotective and mental cognitive therapy. And some of the medications that we have seen out there that we will utilize as well are medications called growth hormone stimulating peptides. And what they do is they're called secretagogues. And one of those medications is called, peptides is called somorolin. So somorolin is FDA approved for small growth stature. And what it does is it's not a growth hormone, it's a stimulating hormone. So it stimulates your pituitary to release growth hormone to then go be dispersed through the liver into your body to help with everything that you're missing as far as growth hormone. So increasing your muscle mass, increasing sleep, cognitive therapy, it does help with. It helps with endurance with some people, helps with visceral fat loss as well. So this medication has been really helpful for a lot of patients that have been struggling, trying to get, you know, a little bit of strength back, recovering from surgery, recovering from, you know, age-related degeneration of muscle. As you know, when we get to about 30 years old, we start to lose a lot of our growth hormone. And typically at age 30 years old, every decade beyond 30, we're losing 15% of our muscle mass. So imagine you, Riz. I mean, you must be down, you know, so much.
Coming in tomorrow to see you.
Oh, perfect.
I need some help.
You know, talking with patients and they, you know, continually ask us, I can eat as much as I can eat. I can work out as much as I can work out, but, you know, I just can't I can't gain or I can't maintain my muscle strength so I can do the thing. So I can be on the pickleball court. I can't walk 18 holes of golf. I can't get there. What can I do in addition to, you know, working out with my, you know, doing this stuff at home, doing my classes, eating right? Is there anything else? And we talked to them that this is an option, certainly to help with that growth hormone stimulating process, to get them feeling better, to get them back to a little bit of feeling the way they used to be. So it certainly is a, you know, a very helpful peptide in this space for patients to get back.
The golden question, cost association for these therapies. So I know that's that's always a discussion that people have, or you know, ask the question. I think if somebody wants it bad enough, they're going to get it, right? But I think they also want to make sure they're doing the right thing for themselves and they're being directed in the right way if they're trying to get to a certain goal. So if somebody came to you and said, hey, Brian, I want to do peptide therapy because of X, Y, and Z, done this research, consulted with my primary care, you guys are the group I want to go with. What does that look like?
Sure. So there's kind of a two-part to that. So the, again, these are all medications that are not paid for by insurance. They are all out-of-pocket expenses. You know, the cost for, you know, some of the BPC-157, TB-500 combination, and then the somorolin, which is the growth hormone stimulating medication, can be anywhere from $300 to $600 a month. And that's certainly quite a bit for some patients on a budget. So you need to be cautious of what you're doing and why you're doing it. But there are some patients that feel that they are okay for paying that out of pocket expense. Going in the black market and gray market, it is considerably less as a cost to a patient to get them out there, to buy them online. But I go back to, you really need to be careful of what you're buying online. You're not getting a product that is either made in a compounding pharmacy or it's made where it's filtered out with all the lipophilic reactions, so you don't get an autoimmune response immune response from that. So you really need to be careful. With that being said, I find with my patients, when I prescribe these medications, or we talk about doing these medications in the office or out of the office, is I want to make sure that these patients understand that this is not just a one-time injection and they're out of my office. I have patients call me at nighttime. I have patients call me on the weekend. I want to make sure that they're comfortable before we give the medication. They ask all their questions. I answer every question they may have. It's more of a concierge treatment that I feel I owe it to these patients. They're getting something that is not in the literature as far as all this research. You know, they can't just get a paper and say, okay, yes, I trust this doctor. I trust the research papers. I understand that. I want to be able to discuss with a parent, with a child, with anybody who asks, what is this medication? What are the risks? What are the benefits? How long do we have to be on it? What are the costs? Uh-huh. I want them to understand it just as much as I understand it, so they feel comfortable not only getting it, but then feel comfortable what they're doing with that and moving forward and say, you know what, and they can walk away with a trust that they came into my office feeling that they got everything they needed out of that office appointment and beyond. And I think that's, you know, and that's in this day and age, it's very difficult for physicians to spend enough time with patients, you know, based on insurance, based on time, based on, you know, units of, you know, what we put forward with insurance and the FDA is very difficult. So for me, getting this whole program, you know, launched over the last several months and moving forward, I really have found it, you know, a great place for me to be in. And Riz, you know, dealing with your patients and physical therapy, I'm sure Dr. Roth as well, and knowing him for years, it's, you know, it's not just treating the diagnosis, it's treating the patient, which is, you know, really beneficial for a lot of people.
No, I agree. And Dr. Roth and I talked about this several months ago. We were, you know, chatting about, you know, who comes to see you for care. And a lot of this can be life-changing for people. And we say we're there for the person. I think not the procedure. It's like, how do we get them better no matter how that looks? I think that was a great point you know, trying to make their life better. And again, this could be life altering for a lot of people, no matter what you're trying to provide for them. So with that, I think, can you describe and talk about intravenous or intramuscular therapies? I think specifically NAD plus, and what that is to the people that are listening. And I don't, Dr. Roth probably has a few follow-up questions there on what that also looks like in the world of orthopedics.
Sure. So again, intravenous therapy for patients, it has really come in the light of the last couple of years. You know, patients have typically got their intravenous therapy, whether they're having surgery or in the hospital over the last couple of years. It's now for treating hangovers or the flu or anything else, jet lag. There's immunity IV therapy. So there's a lot of therapy that can be done through intravenous for patients. And there are certainly, you know, IV bars that are out there. And we do provide pretty much every intravenous that is provided in these kind of these IV bars that are pop up in different areas, which are very helpful for patients, whether they're suffering from any of those, you know, illnesses. One of them that we decided to do is called NAD plus, which is the acronym is nucleotide adenine dinucleotide. NAD plus for short, we're going to call it. So NAD is actually normally made in your mitochondria, and it's basically the energy that gets moved around in your mitochondria. So your cell has mitochondria, and your NAD is something that allows your body to increase throughout, whether that's in your brain or your body, the energy that you need. And over time, the NAD in your cells does decrease. So as it decreases, then we typically lose cognitive therapy, we lose energy. So the NAD supplements that have been out there are NMN. They're basically similar to NAD. They're just minus certain elements of that. So there are patients that have taken oral NAD. There are patients that have done it transdermal. There are patients that have done it through a patch. I feel that the best way to do it is either injectable sub-Q or intravenous NAD+. There are a lot of patients, there's a lot of studies that I've done over the years for NAD plus for addiction therapy, for alcoholism. And a lot of those studies have either been in the US and many have done in Europe to help with cognitive therapy, to help with addiction as well. I don't typically dive into addiction patients or see patients for that. So many of my patients that we may see in our office for NAD therapy is typically patients that would like kind of an energy boost to feel that, to kind of get themselves back on track for feeling energetic. Also patients that have brain fog. I have a subset of patients that have actually suffered from, and you know, Riz, is concussions. So, you know, young athletes suffering concussions have, you know, their cellular ATP is, and the mitochondria is damaged. So to try to replenish that over time, with cognitive therapy, with physical therapy is helpful. But I've found with, you know, a lot of research, and there's some papers that are out there, that NAD plus intravenous through certain protocols has been very helpful.
So I think what's really interesting is that there's a couple ways of looking at this. So you have people not only looking at NAD plus, but NMN and NR, which are the precursors to NAD plus, and whether you take it orally and what it's bioavailability is, and whether you do it sub-Q or intravenous. And, you know, the oral bioavailability of all three of these, I think, is quite poor. And plus, technically, if you give it intravenously, the bioavailability is quite high because it's being given intravenously. However, the issue with NAD plus is its cellular uptake. So the issue is not, does it go into your bloodstream, but do your cells actually take it up, and can you bring it into this cellular structure and into your mitochondria to increase your energy, increase your healing potential? And I think there's limited data on it in terms of just strict level one, you know, randomized controlled trial, large cohorts. But what's really interesting, and I know you have this experience and I have this experience as well, there's a lot of what we call level five evidence, but a lot of great anecdotal evidence, and you see this more than we do, from your patients who will get infusions of NAD plus and tell you anecdotally from their personal experience, this made me feel so much better. This helped my recovery. This helps me have so much more energy on a daily basis. So what are your general thoughts on that? And how do you work with your patients who are doing quite well? And how do you think that's going to progress into the future?
Yeah. So, you know, it goes along, you know, first of all, having the, you know, NAD plus through intravenous, it's difficult because patients have to come into the office and sit there for, you know, an hour, 2 hours to get the IV therapy. So, you know, to spend an hour, 2 hours, you know, once a week or several times a week, depends on the protocol, is difficult. I can tell you from personal experience, I did do NAD plus several times. If it's not given appropriately, it's a little unpleasant feeling. I tell patients that you will feel kind of a heaviness and people don't feel well. They get a little nauseous. So there are medications that we typically would give with that, an anti-nausea medication along with that. But I do think it's, you know, something that certainly it's not for all patients, but the patients that, you know, for cognitive therapy, for patients with concussion management, I think there is a space in there as long as the protocol is sufficient to support that. Then I do think that NAD does have a good, you know, fit for patients. Doing it subcutaneously, it's not as evident that it's going to cross the blood-brain barrier as intravenous would, but it certainly is helpful for patients looking to kind of get that boost. But I think it's still something that we need to investigate further. I think it's still a lot of research that needs to be done with NAD+. But I'm kind of excited to learn more about it as time goes on.
What's the usage of treatment? Meaning, you know, does someone come and say post-concussive, brain fog, cognitive dysfunction? I'm sure it's different with everybody, but what's the quickest or the longest you would say treatments would look like? One treatment, two treatments, 10 treatments? Like, is there been anything out there in the research? Is there something with NAD where you said, hey, we're going to try this and see if you have any positive result? What are you seeing with some of the patients that you've had that have been coming in?
Well, I think certainly, you know, with the cognitive therapy treatments, there has to be also adjunct treatments with that. So people are they're receiving, you know, cognitive physical therapy. They're receiving, you know, treatments with a, you know, maybe a concussion management team as well. So it's not just you're going to walk in and get your NAD plus from us. You need to make sure that this is a kind of a, you know, a several step process that you're getting other adjuncts along with that. There are several protocols that are put into place for concussion management for traumatic brain injury, and for cognitive therapy, brain fog treatments. Typical patients will receive about 5 treatments for the first week. Then they'll go down about 4 treatments the second week. And then they'll do that for several weeks, up to about a month or so. So they'll probably get, you know, 5, 4, and then, you know, go to about maybe, you know, at the end of that month will be maybe 1 or 2 treatments a week. However, what I've seen and the evidence has shown that a lot of patients, it's best to keep up with a NAD plus injection once a week until your symptoms resolve. And there's no time frame. I mean, there's patients that, as you know, risen seeing, you know, we're dealing with athletes is, you know, cognitive symptoms can last several months to years. So am I going to tell somebody that they need to get an NAD plus injection, you know, once a week for the next several years? No. Because they are costly. I mean, it doesn't come without cost either. You know, and each injection can be anywhere from $500 to $1,000 just for one injection. So if you're doing 5 injections a week, you know, and you do, you know, another 8 injections, you know, for the month, I mean, it's a significant cost to patients that it's out of pocket. It's not paid for by insurance.
Have you noticed any improvement with some of your patients that have come in? Has there been any prescription from other outside physicians to come see you for this type of treatment, or is it more or less people reaching out to you because they know that you do it?
I do have 1 or 2 providers that will reach out to me, and knowing that I do it, I think that there are a lot of concussion management physicians that utilize their own protocol and it seems to work for them. And I don't know if they've investigated NAD plus for that, and I don't fault them for that. I think they kind of understand that whatever they've been doing with all their treatment and their teams has worked very well. And that's a good thing for them. This is it's merely something that has been put out there that is a safe medication to utilize to, you know, add on to that process of therapy. And as you know, concussion management takes a team of people, and it takes several, providers and physical therapists and cognitive therapists, neurologists, sometimes speech pathologists. So everybody kind of comes together to help this. And I think if, this is part of it, then that certainly can be, a piece of that puzzle put together. In no way means do I ever tell patients, hey, listen, do the NAD plus, this is going to be it. You don't have to do anything else. Just like physical therapy and surgery, you can do, one part of it, but it's not going to take care of the big picture for you. You can do the NAD plus, but there needs to be all these other, adjuncts that go along with that. So I think it's still early in this area for therapy, for NAD plus, for concussion management, for traumatic brain injury, and for other patients that are looking for that kind of that edge to get better. I think it's a great area to be in, and certainly hopefully this will be on the rise, and this will be part of everybody's protocol if it continues to do what it's doing, which is great.
We've really gone into depth on three therapies that are truly on the cutting edge of orthopedics. Is there anything else that your institute provides or that you would like to discuss that you think would be beneficial to our listeners?
Sure. So, one of the things we talk about that is out there are stem cells. And stem cells are either taking from your own body, which is called BMAC, or they're taking from someone else's. So there is kind of two schools of thought, and the people that do the BMAC, which is taking stem cells from your own body and injecting them back into your body, seem to feel that that is a great way to do it, and it's very helpful. And I think there is a good space for that, for those patients to receive their own stem cells. And then there the other stem cell, which is utilizing stem cells from umbilical cords, and which are called structural tissues. So those structural tissues are made up of the stem cells from umbilical cord, growth factors, hyaluronic acid, and cytokines. And to kind of go back with that is the stem cells. If you think about, what are stem cells and how many stem cells do you have in your body? And it's remarkable. What I didn't know, before when I started investigating, is that when you're 10 years old, you have 4 million stem cells in your body. When you're 32 years old, you have about probably 4,000 stem cells in your body. When you're age 40, you have about 400 to maybe 1,000 stem cells in your body as you get older. So remarkably decrease in stem cells over time. And it goes back to, why do we heal so much quicker when we're younger? Why do the babies heal faster when they have an injury or a cut? And why does it take me forever to heal when I'm older? I get a cut or I get something happens to me. It's, it's a Neosporin on my arm for about a week, and it's Band-Aids, and I got to go through Band-Aids and Neosporin for forever before that heals. But, these kids heal right away. The stem cells, an umbilical cord stem cell, has really been remarkable kind of nuance to the helping patients, get back to where they want to get back to. And stem cells have been extremely helpful in the arena of regenerating tissue, helping rotator cuff repairs, helping meniscus tears, tissue, tendons, muscle. The research out there is a little ambiguous. It's not really, helpful research to show that it's putting cartilage or hyaline cartilage back on knees or back on joints. A lot of that is anecdotal evidence that people have done injections for many years of stem cells or structural tissues. And I do work with a lab that currently makes the structural tissue and procures the structural tissue. And I work with a manufacturing company that I do get those structural tissues from, and have injected many patients with it, and patients have done remarkably well. And this manufacturing company has done probably hundreds of thousands of injections. We have had no adverse reactions, no side effects, no issues with the stem cells or structural tissues, I'll call them. So people have done very well with it, which is great.
That's very encouraging. We like to hear that. Anything else that people would be interested in at the Institute?
I think it just comes down to all these biologics and regenerative medicine treatments that we offer, you know, obviously come with, you know, the expertise of, you know, our team. And our team is essentially there to provide the patients with, you know, trust and care in bringing them from the beginning to the end and beyond. I mean, it's not just that we want to see our patients, you know, get their treatments and leave. We want to basically be there for them along this journey to get them back to their vitality and health and get a better living under great conditions where they want to be at. So that's kind of where we're at, which is great.
Brian, if somebody wants to get a hold of you and the group, what is the best way for them to do that? If they're interested in coming to see you to learn more about Boston Orthopedics and wellness.
Sure. So we have a website that is bostonorthoandwellness.com, www.bostonorthoandwellness.com. We are located in our office, which is at 40 Allied Drive, and which is in Dedham. It's alongside of Dr. Gill's office, which is Boston Sports Medicine and Research Institute. So we both operate down there together, alongside each other. So if any patients need to get in touch with us, please look at our website. Phone number is also attached to our website, which is 617-931-9331. So more than happy to talk to patients at any time. I would say our operation hours are any time in the morning to any time at night or any time that I'm awake.
That's so right.
Happy to talk to everybody at any time. And all my patients know that whether I'm on a field or driving in a car, it's kind of what we do. And, you know, happy to talk about, you know, anything at any time to people. So
it's fantastic. I always tell people too, where I have my cell phone, my personal cell phone, my business card, and everybody that I work with thinks I'm crazy. But I said, you know what, you need to make yourself available for patients that have questions, because that could, again, like Dr. Roth and I were talking about, it can be life-changing for them if it's something that they need to discuss that, you know, for some reason can't wait, but for a lot of times we're trying to provide the best we can. So I'll be down tomorrow for my growth hormone frontal lobe therapy.
Perfect.
I could use it.
We'll put you on a program. We'll get you every year, and then every 6 months beyond 5 years.
Great. I'll have a forehead like Arnold Schwarzenegger. I appreciate you, Brian. Thanks, man.
Oh, no. Thank you, Riz. Thanks for all you do. Dr. Roth, thank you very much. You guys are great. Thanks, everybody. And looking forward to, you know, great future with everybody. So I really appreciate your time. Thank you.
Thanks, Brian. Thank you for tuning in to Behind the Sports Medicine Podcast, proudly sponsored by AJR Sports Science and Healthcare Consulting. At AJR, we are committed to offering a comprehensive range of exceptional services, including applied sports science analytics, healthcare and sports medicine consulting, and leadership and coaching development. To learn more about AJR, visit their website at ajrsportsscience.com. This is your host, Andrew Rizza.
And your co-host, Dr. Cameron Roth. If you enjoyed the content from today's episode, give us a like, leave a comment, and share on social media. You can find all of our episodes on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcast. You can also follow us on Instagram, YouTube, or Twitter at Behind Sports Med Podcast, and stay tuned to our next episode.